Deuteronomy chapter 9. Hear, O Israel, you are now about to cross the Jordan to go in and dispossess nations greater and stronger than you, with large cities that have walls up to the sky. The people are strong and tall, Anakites. You know about them and have heard it said, who can stand up against the Anakites? But be assured today that the Lord your God is the one who goes across ahead of you like a devouring fire. He will destroy them. He will subdue them before you, and you will drive them out and annihilate them quickly, as the Lord has promised you. After the Lord your God has driven them out before you, do not say to yourself, the Lord has brought me here to take possession of this land because of my righteousness. No, it is on account of the wickedness of the nations that the Lord is going to drive them out before you. It is not because of your righteousness or your integrity that you are going in to take possession of the land, but on account of their wickedness of these nations, the Lord your God will drive them out before you to accomplish what he swore to your fathers, to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. Understand that it is not because of your righteousness that the Lord your God is giving you this good land to possess, for you are a stiff-necked people. Remember this and never forget how you provoked the Lord your God to anger in the desert. From the day you left Egypt until you arrived here, you have been rebellious against the Lord. At Horeb, you aroused the Lord's wrath so that he was angry enough to destroy you. When I went up on the mountain to receive the tablets of stone, the tablets of the covenant that the Lord had made with you, I stayed on the mountain 40 days and 40 nights. I ate no bread and drank no water. The Lord gave me 2 stone tablets inscribed by the finger of God. On them were all the commandments the Lord proclaimed to you on the mountain out of the fire on the day of the assembly. At the end of the 40 days and 40 nights, the Lord gave me the 2 stone tablets, the tablets of the covenant. Then the Lord told me, go down from here at once, because your people, whom you brought out of Egypt, have become corrupt. They have turned back quickly from what I commanded them, and have made a cast idol for themselves. And the Lord said to me, I have seen this people. They are a stiff-necked people indeed. Let me alone, so that I may destroy them and blot out their name from under the heaven. And I will make you into a nation stronger and more numerous than they. So I turned and went down from the mountain while it was ablaze with fire, and the 2 tablets of the covenant were in my hands. When I looked, I saw that you had sinned against the Lord your God. You had made for yourselves an idol cast in the shape of a calf. You had turned aside quickly from the way that the Lord had commanded you. So I took the 2 tablets and threw them out of my hands, breaking them to pieces before your eyes. Then once again I fell prostrate before the Lord for 40 days and 40 nights. I ate no bread and drank no water because of all the sin you had committed, doing what was evil in the Lord's sight and so provoking him to anger. I fear the anger of and the wrath of the Lord, for he was angry enough with you to destroy you. But again the Lord listened to me, and the Lord was angry enough with Aaron to destroy him. But at that time I prayed for Aaron also. And I also took that sinful thing of yours, the calf you had made, and burned it in the fire. Then I crushed it and ground it into powder as fine as dust, and threw the dust into a stream that flowed down the mountain. You also made the Lord angry at Taberah, at Massah, and at Kibroth Hattaavah. And when the Lord sent you out from Kadesh Barnea, he said, go up and take possession of the land I'm giving you. But you rebelled against the command of the Lord your God. You did not trust him or obey him. You have been rebellious against the Lord ever since I have known you. I lay prostrate before the Lord those 40 days and 40 nights because the Lord had said he would destroy you. I prayed to the Lord and said, O sovereign Lord, do not destroy your people for your inheritance that you redeemed by your great power and brought out of Egypt with a mighty hand. Remember your servants, Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. Overlook the stubbornness of this people, their wickedness and their sin. Otherwise, the country from which you brought us will say, because the Lord was not able to take them into the land he had promised them, and because he hated them, he brought them out and put them to death in the desert. But they are your people, your inheritance, that you brought out by your great power and your outstretched arm.
All right, what's the point? Deuteronomy, fourth chapter, ninth chapter. You ever asked that question? There's a famous statement, right? Verse 1, what does it say? Shema Israel. Again. All right. How often? We're going to run into this Shema Israel several times, aren't we? So it's more than just love the Lord your God with all your heart. In fact, that's the only thing. It's only about three or four times it says it here. The rest of it says what? Pay attention to the statutes and the judgments. You know, so, you know, sometimes it's kind of hard because, see, we live in a world, we think, well, we can't obey the commandments of God. But the answer is yes, you can. Because, see, you have an upper hand. Most of you have an upper hand. And the upper hand you have is the Spirit of the eternal God is joined with your spirit. So it's more possible for you than anybody else. If I can use that terminology. But we haven't ended in the book of Deuteronomy yet. Because there's something that this Moses man said. Now, one thing that's interesting in verse 1 and 2, the first thing he tells them is what?
Listen.
What?
Listen.
Listen first, yes. That's the next thing. What are you supposed to listen to?
His instructions, I mean.
He says, I want you to know where you're going, and where you're going is not going to be a piece of cake. It's going to be trials. You're going to meet up with people or nations that are stronger, mightier, wealthier, you name it. They got you hands down. In fact, you don't have a chance. Unless, of course, I do something on the way. So one thing, you look at your own private life, you have to start saying, now, how can I overcome such trials and difficulties that are far greater than me? Well, every trial and difficulty that God brings for you is going to be smaller than you.
Yeah.
So it's going to be greater. Because he wants to build something. What does he want to build?
Character.
In order?
Faith.
Trust.
What is all that going to do for us?
Help us to follow him.
I'm sorry, what?
Help us to do what he says.
Okay. For our benefit? Yes.
And his.
For what?
And his.
And his, but more so for
others.
You're doing it for others. You're becoming leaders today. You're becoming kings and priests today. For others. You're not become a king and a priest for yourself. You're not listening to Moses that you may be able to go through your life and say, I believe Moses. To believe in Moses is not good enough. Nor is it to believe in Jesus good enough. Believe in Yahshua is not good enough. Because he has a goal in mind. And that goal of mine is to make kings and priests. And that is only for the function of aiding and helping other people, not yourself. All right? You're all becoming this now in this world. Now, sometimes we look at the world chaos, the world religions, and the world governments. And ironically, listen to me carefully, we pray that God will bring forth leaders that will actually help the world straighten themselves out. Guess who he's calling? You.
Us.
And me. That's right. That's who he's dealing with. The world we have blessed. The book of Romans tells us very clearly. Remember what it says there? The creation itself groans and moans for the sons of God to take over. Not for God to take over. Not for Messiah to come. They are groaning and moaning for the sons of God to take over. Now that's a little different story, isn't it?
Yeah.
If you are related to the creator of heaven and earth, you are a descendant of him by adoption, however you would talk about it, then guess what the world's waiting for? They're waiting for your leadership, waiting for you to grow, waiting for you to develop, waiting for you to be able to take charge. Okay, now if you go with the book of Numbers, they're crossing over their Jordan River. And they have to take charge of things that are greater than them, bigger than them. Nations, all five nations were bigger. Each individual nation was bigger than the whole nation of Israel. And there was how many? Seven of them. Told us that all seven nations that are inside that land were bigger and stronger and mightier in both strength, power, wealth, and everything else you probably could think of. The Israelites didn't walk across there with a ready-made army was well-trained and 40 years and fighting and fighting and fighting became a military might. They weren't. You know what happened to them? Half of them died off before they even got there. All the mighty men, all men and warriors are all dead by the time this comes to pass. So basically he's got a brand new generation coming in on the scene. And he tells them to be strong, be courageous. Now what was the first thing that Moses said to Joshua? Daniel talked about it, right? And then turn around, God said the same thing. Four more times, right? So in a sense, when you have a trial or difficulty, we must remember what God said to Joshua. Because we ourselves must do the very same thing. Was it frightening for Joshua? Of course. Was it difficult for Joshua? Yes. Did Joshua make mistakes in his leadership? Yes. Did he throw in the towel and say, I've had it? No. All right? That's where we are at. In a spiritual fight, we can't throw in the towel. Verse 4. Do not think in your heart. Now, does that phrase somewhat sound similar? What did Jesus or Yahshua say? Do not think I came to destroy the law of the prophets. That's kind of like a play on words here. But here it says, don't think in your heart that what? You're better than those other seven nations. That's not the reason why I'm taking you over the Jordan River. Why is he taking them over the Jordan River? Why does he want them to go to war?
Because the other countries are more evil than they are.
We'll clarify the wickedness compared, because God had another statement to say about the Israelites. All right? Wickedness is one thing. The Israelites had a different kind of problem. And we'll talk about that. And that's what this chapter is going to talk about today. All right? But before we do, let's look backtrack just a little bit in verse 3. Because see, you're ready to go across, right? To fight the nations that are greater than you. He says, your Lord, your God will go before you, is a consuming fire. Not it's past tense. Not that he will be. It's not that he is as. He is a consuming fire. Now, when God is a consuming fire, what does that mean?
Get out of the way.
Run, Horace, run.
Well, fire in itself is used to purify at times.
And?
Metals, and to burn up the chaff and the things that are not, and also to give you trials that brings things out. That
he's going to be the consuming fire before the seven nations. All right?
So he's going to cleanse.
Turn them into
ash.
Right? Good? I should remember those words. That's what God does. When he becomes a fire, or he is a fire, he's only going to do one thing with it, and that's turn it to ashes. This is the reason why they're wicked. He says, I'm going to burn them up. Literally, in a sense, spiritually speaking. We'll talk about that, not today, but some other time. But you understand that it is God who is, listen to me carefully, I'm going to play on words, God is Gehenna Hellfire. He's the one that's going to catch you on fire. He's the one that creates it. He's the one that forms it. He's the one that establishes it. And he's the one that makes the decision. Right? Because of the wickedness. Now, but verse 5. What did verse 5 say?
He reiterates verse 4.
Exactly the same thing. He repeated it. It's almost like he's hammering something into their head. I want you to know something here. He repeated himself again the second time because why? He wasn't clear the first time. He wanted to hammer into their heads that, listen, it's not because of your righteousness. You got to get that down. Now, it's a plain thing. You've got to clear your mind. But you're going to go over there and you're going to carry out my
judgments.
You're going to carry out my judgments. Yes, they're stronger, they're mightier, they're greater, they can outnumber you, they're more powerful than you, but you're going to carry out my judgment against them. That's what kings do. Right? Kings to bring forth an army. What is the Lord? He's called the Lord of what? I'm sorry, what?
Hosts.
A Lord of hosts means the same thing as Lord of the armies. He's the captain of the armies. All right? And verse 6?
Pretty much the same thing.
How many times? But clear. 1, 2, 3. But see, remember, he said it with Joshua how many times?
Four times,
you know. It wasn't really a condemnation thing. It was like, get this clear in your head first. Yes, you're going to go over there. No, you're not qualified. But yes, go do it. And that's what, you know, Book of Joshua talks about that. Book of Judges, he goes through it now. And we're going to find out sometimes they did a good job and sometimes they didn't do a good job, you know, because they were afraid of those seven nations. Too big, too great, too powerful, too mighty. But God said, look, I'm the consumer. I'm the fire. And I'll get them before you have a chance. Now, I find it very interesting here. Some of your translations, verse 7 starts off with the word remember. All right, now this is what you, before you go over Jordan and begin to execute or carry out the judgments of God, you must remember something. What are you supposed to remember? Your wickedness? No. You're supposed to remember you provoked God to anger. And God didn't destroy you, but you provoked him to anger. So what does it tell you as being a king and a priest? If you're a king and you're a priest, whatever you do, don't provoke God in anger. Carry out what he wants you to do and live your life accordingly so you may be able to be one that will not be out there provoking him to anger. You have been rebellious. That's a big, powerful word. That's different than I'm destroying those nations because of their wickedness. Now he says, I want you to remember you have provoked the Lord in anger and you did it in rebellion. What's worse? Wickedness or rebellion?
Rebellion
is great. The judgment is going to against you greater than it's going to be against those seven nations.
Because
I can resurrect the seven nations like I did or will be doing, and I'll deal with them. Sodom and Gomorrah, wicked. I'll raise them up and they'll judge this generation. Remember he said that to them? Because that generation was provoking God to wrath.
They knew better.
Sorry, what?
They knew better.
They knew better. And this is what's happening. They had 40 years here, people, of learning and understanding the statutes and judgments of God. It's not they're walking in there saying, well, I don't know what to do. I don't know what God wants me to do. I have a slice. I'll just, you know, whatever he tells me to do, I'll do. What it is. No, they were trained for 40 years. They didn't wander out in the wilderness and God says, okay, I'll come back after 40 years and see how you're doing. No, they were taught. They're educated. They're taught about the statutes, the judgments of God. And what do you have in your world? Some of you are very young right now. Some of you are old like me. But you got a life now, and your job is to learn what the statutes are. And so you will have, in a sense, greater condemnation if it's not carried out. And that's what Moses is warning them about. See, their problem, Moses is saying, is you provoked. You knew. You provoked. You rebelled. That's different than a nation that's never known God. That's different than a group of people that have never known anything about Him. Egypt will not be judged as severely as Israel if they don't carry out the orders. Does that make sense to you?
Mm-hmm.
And see, in our spiritual world, as we walk and we live about God, we walk, we live and think about what He has in mind, we can't just say, well, I can't keep the commandments, I can't keep the law, I can't keep the statutes, I can't do anything. I'll just sit here and wait. Why? It's like burying the talent. The talents is what God gives you to carry out the functions like He did Israel. Well, Daniel read some examples. In fact, I think it was a real quick example in the first part of Joshua, where one young man, or old man, I don't know how old he was, decided to do something. He decided to keep some garments. He decided to keep some gold. He decided to keep some of these things in the city of Ai. And it cost more than his life. You remember that? It cost the lives of hundreds of people. Okay? You see, that's what we have to think about of becoming judges and becoming priests. We have to learn what the function of a judge is. You have to learn what the function of a priest is before you can carry out what he has. And this is what Moses is hammering at. This is where you're going, people. He says, you're going to go over there. Now, remember those two mountains? Daniel talked about them. He said, one's going to be a cursing mountain, the other's going to be a blessing mountain. Which one are you going to choose? Let's go on now. And of course, now he said, where are my notes at? Remember that you provoked the Lord, the first, you provoked Him at Horoth. Verse 7 and 8. I got that part, rebellion. He says, now on the day of assembly. Now he goes on, he goes in there. Now this is interesting. He says, now, we talk about 40 days. Why is it important? And Moses went out of the way to make sure he let them know it was 40 days and 40 nights the first time. And then he came down, broke the tablets. He went back up there again. He wanted to make sure they understood it was another set of 40 days and 40 nights. Now we went up there the second time. Why did he go up there for?
To get the tablets. To get the tablets again.
He went up there to ask for intercession because God was mad enough to kill them all. I just
okay, good. Well, see, it is. No, he went up there for 40 days and 40 nights and, in a sense, begged, pleaded, asked God. That's what the end of the chapter talks about here. That's what he did. But that's not the only time he had another 40 days and 40 nights, by the way. When was the third time he had 40 days and 40 nights? We'll get there today if you don't remember. Yes.
Why would it take that long to just ask him to do it?
It's a long way.
It's a long way. Why 40? Why not 10?
Yeah,
why not 188?
Why not an hour? Just say.
Oh, hour not fast enough. You got to suffer the loss long enough to know. I don't want this to return again.
It says he was fasting. Now, were those 40 days, 40 nights back to back?
Yeah. Well, there's one short week in between. We'll talk about that sometime, the Feast of Tabernacles. I'll tell you and clarify what that takes place. But right now, I just want to know there was in between. We won't go there today. It's a little chart I have to kind of draw up and show you exactly the timing, exactly what time he went up, what time he went back down again, what time he went back up again, what time he went back down again. It has to do association with the testimonies.
Yeah. So there's a break in between the 40-day period.
There's a small break between the two. Yes.
Is that, what sort of connection is there between these 40 days and 40 nights and 40 days and 40 nights that Messiah spent out in the wilderness?
You don't know.
Seems like an odd coincidence. Especially if Messiah is going to be...
Okay, let me ask you a question.
A copycat, maybe?
Sorry, what?
Hardly.
No, doesn't he use 40 for...
Who was the first person who had 40 days and 40 nights on him?
Noah.
What do you think? What do you think was going through Noah's brain?
When's he going to stop?
Oh, please, oh, please, oh, please.
Stop
the boat floats.
I want you to put in perspective something. Noah suffered tremendous amount of loss. He lost all friends, lost all family members. No brother, no sister, no aunt, no uncle. He lost them all. Do you think he was up there and say, boy, I'm sure glad I got this glass of champagne? No, he was suffering the loss. And sometimes we don't think of Noah having a problem with pain and agony, but yet the reason why God had him do it in the first place, because just prior to that, God says, I'm in pain, I'm in agony, I've got to stop this, I can wipe mankind off the face of the earth. Okay? Now we come to the Messiah. What is on earth? Why did he have to have 40 days of pain, suffering, agony? Why?
Because of our sins.
Testing?
Our sins. Our sins and our transgressions. He had to face, at the end of the fast, the most powerful source, which was stronger, mightier, greater, more powerful than him. Because he was weak. So yeah, relationship to suffering. Not having anything for a while. And the 40 years in the wilderness is a point of suffering. To test you out. He said, for 40 years I'll test you out. For 40 years I'll find out what you're made up of. Do you think God's not going to test you out for 40 years of your life? You got news for you. If you're not 40 yet, and if God didn't begin with you until you're 20, you still got a way to go. If God didn't begin to you when you're 40, you still got a ways to go. You understand what I'm saying? You don't know when God's going to cut it off. You don't know what's 40 years or 40 days, 40 months, 40 weeks, but 40 throws in there. And we have to suffer. Why? Why did the Messiah have to suffer? Why did Noah have to suffer?
So we can see our obedience.
Greater than that. Go beyond that.
So we can have compassion and understanding.
Have compassion and understanding for people who are going to be having to face. And you are the one that's going to give them strength. Just as much. And the Messiah, who is alive today, but not when he's in the flesh. He was weak in the flesh. He even said that, right? He didn't have the strength of the flesh. He could do absolutely nothing to keep himself alive unless God decided to keep himself alive. Keep him alive. He had no strength. Because he's flesh. He was flesh. But he relied upon the power of the Spirit of God joining with his spirit, as the book of Romans says, to give him strength. God's not out to destroy your spirit. He's out to strengthen your spirit. And here is what Moses is saying. God is the consuming fire. He's going to give you strength. He's going to have your, yes, you're weak. Yes, you're feeble. Yes, you don't have its resources. Yes, you don't have this. But I am going to give it to you. Because I'm going to be there with you. Now, you don't think Joseph suffered pain and agony? You don't think Joshua? Not Josh. No, Joshua. What's that? Jacob, I'm going to say Israel, but Jacob suffered pain and agony. What did he say in his end days? All my days were long and evil. They were hard. They were difficult. All right? You understand what I'm saying so far? So we do have to understand in our lives, have you ever suffered anything longer than 3 days?
Yeah.
I will tell you, some of you young people, you got to be ready for it because God brings the pressure on greater and greater and greater and greater. Because that's what the test is all about. After they had their 40 years of wilderness, guess where they went? Into a land where there are more tests. That's what God does. In order that we may be made kings and priests. And he says now, pop down to 13, he says, therefore, the Lord spoke unto me, saying, I have seen the people, and indeed they are a... Now, stiff neck is not a wicked neck. It's an old English phrase, by the way. What does stiff neck mean?
Hard to turn.
It's what?
Hard to turn.
Okay.
Stubborn.
Does what?
Doesn't bow.
No, that's the old English phrase. Do you understand why they use that English phrase of stiff-necked? You don't bow. You don't submit. You don't give unto honor unto God who is to be honored. You're just going to sit there like a brave idiot and let him kill you. I'm sorry. How far did Moses bow his? Down on the floor. How far did Joshua do it? Down on the floor. I mean, we got great men in the past. David, how far did he go? Down on the floor. They weren't stiff-necked at all. In fact, they were more than stiff. They went down. They were more flexible. They went down in complete submission in a very vulnerable state. You know, if you ever bound before somebody, lay prostrate upon the floor. The guy is bigger, stronger, mightier, always has been. You're down there, laying on the floor forever. You think you have the upper hand? You don't. And all you're waiting for is hope this guy will not kill you in reality, in real life. All right? And sometimes that doesn't work. So stiff neck means exactly what it says. He says, let me destroy them and blot them out. I don't want to hear the name Israel again. He wasn't going to use the name Israel again. I'm going to use the name Moses from now on. Your name I will use. So instead of becoming Israelites, you become Mosesites.
Doesn't
roll off the tongue very well, right? Moshiites. It doesn't really roll off very good, you know?
In Exodus, doesn't God... say to Moses, instead of saying my people, he says to Moses, your people?
Yes.
Yes.
He does, doesn't he? Yeah.
Well, you know, that tells you that God really
Like, those are your kids.
Yeah. It's like, if you ever had, some of you, I know you're old enough to do this or have this happen. Sometimes when you have kids, one or two, or maybe all.
No, two.
Okay. You almost feel like saying, I'm sorry I had them. They're so wicked. They're so horrible. That's how God felt. They're so wicked. They're so horrible. In case you Israelites, they're so rebellious. So against me. I wish I never had called them. And that's kind of the parallel. When we see him saying this to Moses, and he turned around and said the very same thing to Noah. Do we think God has emotions?
Yes.
Oh, man, they're so powerful. You want to make sure you're on the good side of him. Yes.
Well, he says he knows the end from the beginning. How can he not know that? They'd be that God's bad.
How does he know the end?
Well, he says he knows the end from the beginning.
He knows the results of the end from how the beginning started.
But wouldn't he know that they're going to be that bad?
No.
No.
He even so said so. I had to believe what God said, and he says, I didn't expect that.
Oh.
He cut human life down rapidly right after the flood. I mean, like, oops, I'm not going to do this again. Not because he made a mistake, because the wickedness of man is so great. Now, just stop and think about this with God. An adult becomes an adult at what age?
20.
Okay. Regardless, if you live for 400,000 years, you become an adult at the age of 20. Can you picture from adult, from there until the age of like 900 years old, how much wickedness you can conjure up in your mind? So the only way to stop that is cut the life short. That's why we have in the book of Proverbs, it says, not Proverbs, it was Psalms, 70 years. No one has lived longer than 120 years. Moses is the one that lived the longest from the time of calling him out of Egypt. No one's ever reached 120 years in their life. But all died before he did. All died younger than 120. And technically, he did die an old man. He's very vigorous, very healthy, very vibrant. Now, what made them rebellious, what made them, is because they made an image after they said they wouldn't do it. They started saying, we'll go find some other God to serve because, well, they use excuse me, don't Moses, don't know where he's at. That was just a cop out. That's pretty easy, yes.
Wasn't the golden calf the image of Elohim at that time, though? If you look at the ancient Hebrew.
What?
The golden calf, wasn't that a symbol?
Oh.
Because in ancient Hebrew, the symbol of God was a shepherd's crook and a pictograph of a steer's head or a bull's head.
Yeah, the ancient olive was like a
steer's.
Olive, yeah.
Yes, I understand that one.
But I thought he was angry because he told them not to create any likenesses or any images.
That's in heaven or on earth?
Or on earth. It wasn't.
What is the image that's in heaven?
What's the image that's in heaven?
What's the image that's in heaven? What does the bull represent?
Leadership.
Strength.
Strength, power, might. Around the throne of God are four images. One of them is the image of a
bull.
Yeah, a bull. All right. Bull always. What is our stock market?
Bull.
They call it a bull market. What's it called a bull market for? Why did they call it a crappy one? Or why did they call it a wonderful one? Why did they call it a sheep? Because it isn't. The bull got power, strength, and fortitude. I mean, it just charges. It does its job, and it's over with. Okay. Let's go on now. Verse 20. I like this. Actually, we go to 21 here. I like this statement. It's written in my translation here. Because he said there, then I took your sin. Isn't that interesting, Steve? He took their sin. What did he do with their sin? What did he do to it?
He burned it.
He burned it. He turned it into fine ashes, crumbled down to nothing. And then what did he have? What did he do then?
Had
it down
the river.
And had him drink it.
And they had to drink it.
Yeah.
Oh. They had to partake of the sin.
How do you know they had to drink it?
That's what it says.
Exodus.
Yeah, it's probably Acts, it's probably the 21st or 22nd chapter of Exodus.
But even here it implies it goes into the stream that's coming down the mountain, so up the river.
But that's not all. Yes.
Just a thought. I was thinking about they sprinkled the powder and crushed gold into the water that's coming down the mountain. Is that the same water that they were getting the water from?
That's right, from the rock. Yeah.
So it seems like a very interesting thing that you're taking, basically saying, okay, this is the water that's keeping you alive. You know, this is the water of life, so to speak. And, you know, you are trying to mix something else with it, some other source of it. So this water that would normally be nice to drink is now got gold in it.
Got now got gold. Gold in them there hills.
Yeah.
Gold water.
Gold water. But I want to go to verse 22 for a moment. Because, you know, he said, remember. We're going to go through a little bit of work here on 22. Verse 22. Also at what?
Taberah.
What happened at Taberah? Because he's supposed to remember, he said. What happened? Now, of course, it didn't happen to us, so therefore we don't have to worry about it, right? Now, it's an example for us to look back and say, oh, provoked God to anger. So it's a lesson for us to look back and say, can I provoke God to anger? No. Yes, you can. What happened there? Numbers 11. And I only want you to read 1 and 3. 1, 2, and 3, but not any farther.
What, chapter 1?
Yep, Numbers 11th chapter. Anybody wants to read it?
I'll read it.
All right.
Chapter 11, verse 1.
1 to 3.
Therefore, you are to love Adonai your God and always obey his commission, regulations, rulings, and mitzvah.
Numbers 11.
I was in Deuteronomy.
So you have to become like...
Okay. But the people began complaining about their hardships to Adonai. When Adonai heard it, his anger flared up so that fire from Adonai broke out against them and consumed the outskirts of the camp.
Brilliant.
Then the people cried to Moshe.
No, that's verse 3?
No, that's verse 2.
Verse 2.
Okay, I'm sorry.
Then the people cried to Moshe. Moshe prayed to Adonai and the fire abated. That place was called Taberah, because Adonai's fire broke out against them.
What was their problem?
Complaining.
By the way, how many times did God allow complaints?
A lot.
Ten.
The tenth one did it. And that generation was wiped out. You're getting that, aren't you? You're getting that picture? Okay, good. Why is there 10 commandments? The 10th one's the final one.
rain strikes on your house.
Then comes death. Then comes death. All right? Okay, now the second one was at Masha. And that is in Exodus 17, verse 1 to 7. Exodus 17, verse 1 to 7. You read it?
Exodus.
Let's read it.
Yes.
You read it?
Yeah.
Okay.
1 through 7?
1 to 7, yeah.
Then all the congregation of the children of Israel set out on their journey from the wilderness of Sin, according to the commandment of the Lord, and camped in Rephidim. But there was no water for the people to drink. Therefore the people contended with Moses and said, "Give us water that we may drink." So Moses said to them, "Why do you contend with me? Why do you tempt the Lord?" And the people thirsted there for water. And the people complained against Moses and said, "Why is it you have brought us up out of Egypt to kill us and our children and our livestock with thirst?" So Moses cried out to the Lord, saying, "What shall I do with this people? They are almost ready to stone me." The Lord said to Moses, "Go on before the people and take with you some of the elders of Israel. Also take in your hand your rod with which you struck the river, and go. Behold, I will stand before you there on the rock in Horeb, and you shall strike the rock. The water will come out of it, that the people may drink." And Moses did so in the sight of the elders of Israel. So he called the name of the place Massah and Meribah, because of the contention of the children of Israel, and because they tempted the Lord, saying, "Is the Lord among us or not?"
That last statement, very last statement, is what the people said. Did you think that provoked him?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah, that's what he said. Yeah. Hey, this is one of those provocations. What are they complaining about? No water. Now, remember, God tests you out by taking away something that is a necessity in your life. Not luxury, not glory, not things you kind of do without, but that which you do need desperately to survive. He removes that. Does that seem to be fair? Doesn't seem to be fair at human point, right? They all complained. God not with us! There's no water! Okay. I did it. Struck the rock and out came the water. We won't go into the theory in that one right off hand. Now the last one here I want you to go to. And that's back into Numbers, the 11th chapter again. But this time it's from verse 4 to verse 35. The rest of the entire chapter is quite long. Who wishes to read that one? He's listed three here for a reason. They all have different kind of reasons behind it. Who wants to read this one? Okay. You're from verse 4 to the end of the chapter.
Okay. In Numbers 11.
Numbers 11.
The riffraff in their midst felt a gluttonous craving, and the Israelites, moreover, wept and said, "If only we had meat to eat. We remember the fish that we used to eat free in Egypt, the cucumbers, the melons, the leeks, the onions, and the garlic. Now our gullets are shriveled. There is nothing at all, nothing but this manna to look to." Now the manna was like coriander seed, and in color it was like bdellium. The people would go about and gather it, grind it between millstones, or pound it in a mortar, boil it in a pot, and make it into cakes. It tasted like rich cream. When the dew fell on the camp at night, the manna would fall upon it. Moses heard the people weeping, every clan apart, each person at the entrance of his tent. The Lord was very angry, and Moses was distressed. And Moses said to the Lord, "Why have you dealt ill with your servant, and why have I not enjoyed your favor, that you have laid the burden of all this people upon me? Did I conceive all this people? Did I bear them that you should say to me, carry them in your bosom as a nurse carries an infant to the land that you have promised on oath to their fathers? Where am I to get meat to give to all this people when they whine before me and say, give us meat to eat? I cannot carry all this people by myself, for it is too much for me. If you would deal thus with me, kill me rather, I beg you, and let me see no more of my wretchedness. Then the Lord said to Moses, gather for me 70 of Israel's elders, of whom you have experience as elders and officers of the people, and bring them to the tent of meeting, and let them take their place with you. I will come down and speak with you there, and I will draw upon the spirit that is on you and put it upon them. And they shall share the burden of the people with you, and you shall not bear it alone. And say to the people, be ready for tomorrow, and you shall eat meat. For you have kept whining before the Lord and saying, if only we had meat to eat. Indeed, we were better off in Egypt. The Lord will give you meat, and you shall eat. But you shall eat not one day, not two, not even 5 days, or 10, or 20, but a whole month, until it comes out of your nostrils and becomes loathsome to you. For you have rejected the Lord who is among you by whining before him and saying, oh, why did we ever have to leave Egypt? But Moses said, the people who are with me number 600,000 men. Yet you say I will give them enough meat to eat for a whole month? Could enough flocks and herds be slaughtered to suffice them? Or could all the fish of the sea be gathered for them to suffice them? And the Lord answered Moses, is there a limit to the Lord's power? You shall soon see whether what I have said happens to you or not. Moses went out and reported the words of the Lord to the people. He gathered 70 of the people's elders and stationed them around the tent. Then the Lord came down in a cloud and spoke to him. He drew upon the spirit that was on him and put it upon the 70 elders. And when the spirit rested upon them, they spoke in ecstasy, but it did not continue. Two men, one named Eldad and the other Medad, had remained in the camp, yet the spirit rested upon them. And they were among those recorded, but they had not gone out to the tent. And they spoke in ecstasy in the camp. A youth ran out and told Moses, saying, Eldad and Medad are acting the prophet in the camp. And Joshua, son of Nun, Moses' attendant from his youth, spoke up and said, my Lord Moses, restrain them. But Moses said to him, are you wrought up on my account? Would that all the Lord's people were prophets, that the Lord put his spirit upon them. And Moses then re-entered the camp together with the elders of Israel. And a wind from the Lord started up, swept quail from the sea and strewed them over the camp about a day's journey on this side and about a day's journey on that side, all around the camp and some 2 cubits deep on the ground. The people set to gathering quail all that day and night and all the next day. Even he who gathered least had 10 homers, and they spread them out all around the camp. The meat was still between their teeth, not yet chewed, when the anger of the Lord blazed forth against the people, and the Lord struck the people with a very severe plague. That place was named Kibroth Hataavah, because the people had the craving, were buried there.
Quite a long story, isn't it? And what took place?
Wine and dining.
For how many days? 30 days. That's a lot. So you pretty well understand why. You know, he actually had mercy on Moses because Moses needed help. But Moses' complaint was more legitimate. I can't do this.
Yeah.
He needed help. He needed strength from other people because he himself is a flesh and blood person and couldn't keep it up. So what happens when you think? Don't answer the question. I want you to think about it, please. What happens when the times are hard and it's difficult and you finally make a complaint? And he says, okay, then he gives you $30,000 a day. Oh, great, wonderful. And all of a sudden, what happens?
The tax man comes.
Along comes a curse here soon after, right? I mean, it turned into a filthy curse. I mean, it happened to them, right? Don't complain to God you don't have something that you really would like to have when you really don't need it. Yes.
So God told Moses, okay, I'm going to give him meat. I'm going to give him so much meat that I don't know what to do with. But he didn't tell him he was going to send the curse. So what was it that made, what was it that made God so angry? Was it the fact that they were complaining to begin with? Or that when he finally sent them in, they were the meat.
Okay.
They were so greedy.
Verse 4.
Verse 4.
Was that what the one I want you to read?
That's what.
Or 5.
Do you remember the fish that we used to eat?
No, it went before that.
The riffraff.
The riffraff. You know what's a riffraff? What is a riffraff?
The mixed multitude.
What's another word for them?
The trouble rousers,
you know. And guess what they did? The Israelites said, yeah, they got a point. That's where the error came in. They just allowed that riffraff, or those, it was just a complaint, and didn't listen, because next verse says, they heard. They heard the riffraff.
That's not what I'm asking. At the end, it says, the meat was still in their teeth.
Oh, yeah.
Right.
And Adonai was blazing angry at that point and struck them with the plague.
And they died.
Was it his intention to send the plague before? What I'm asking is, if God had sent the meat and then they realized what they had done and said, you know what, forgive us for our complaining, thank you for the meat, but forgive us for our complaining, would he have still sent the plague? At what point did he decide to send the plague, I guess is what I'm asking.
At the beginning of their complaint. Because they didn't back away from complaining. With God, you can say, I'm sorry, God. He says, you're still going to pay the judgment. I don't care. You're still going to pay the judgment. You go before a judge and you have a $50,000 fine. You say, judge, I'm sorry. The judge says, I know you're sorry. And you're repentant of it, and you're going to be an apologetic person, but you're still going to pay $50,000. You're still going to pay the penalty. But I want to go to jail. I'm sorry, you broke the law. You're going to go to jail. I know you're sorry, and we'll see what the judges do. We'll see what the... But this is it. You broke the law.
Yeah,
there you go.
There's a plea bargain, okay? There is
no plea bargain with God.
I know. Moses, well, yeah, you do sometimes.
Not when you're not... In this case, you're not.
Moses.
Not at all.
Innocent.
Not at all. We think we have plea bargaining with God. We don't.
No, there's a difference between plea bargaining yourself or having somebody plead our bargains for you.
Yeah.
We have the Messiah who plead bargains for us. Yeah. Then they had Moses who plead bargains.
Yeah, Moses.
That's what we never.
And when Moses pleaded with him, he saved Aaron's life.
He was allowed to.
And the second time, third time he went on, we're not there. We'll go there right now. In fact, we'll go to one more, verse 32.
Numbers.
And it's with Kadesh Barach. We'll do a brief one on it because it's a little bit long, late.
Which book?
We're going to go to Numbers 8th verse. Actually, this whole thing happened in Numbers 13 and 14. We want to go there, but we're going to go to Numbers 8, 8th chapter. I don't think it's on Numbers 13 and 14. It's not Numbers, it's Exodus, I think it is. Anyway, but Numbers 8, verse 8 to 13. Remember what happened there? Someone read it. Starting verse.
Numbers 8, what?
Verse 8.
Verse 8, Numbers 8th chapter.
Then let them take a young bull with its grain offering, a fine flour mixed with oil. You shall take another young bull.
Oh, you know what? I got the wrong book.
Okay.
What chapter,
what
book is
it
supposed to be?
I'll tell you what it is. I can't remember what. It's when the spies were to go into the promised land, and they came back again, and only two of them said, yeah, it was good.
Oh, yeah.
But the rest of them rebelled and said, we're going to go there anyway.
Yeah.
That's where God got mad. It's the fourth time he got mad, and guess what happened to them? They got wiped out. It's probably in Exodus.
It's in Exodus somewhere.
Probably Exodus
13, I believe.
13 and 14 would be in Exodus 13 and 14. Yeah, I got a number down here. Anyway. The bottom line is, you did not believe him. That's what it says there in verse 23 of Deuteronomy there. You rebelled and you did not believe him. You don't believe God. That's bad news for you. Now, we're not talking about a stranger learning what God's about. We're talking about people, excuse me, for 40 years. Okay? Don't have an excuse. I'm not talking about someone stumbling for the first time in their life, walking across the trials and saying, oh God, please forgive me. Not talking about, we're talking about people 40 years of their life. These are 40-year-old people walking into this place. They have learned from childhood. And Moses made it very clear in the next two chapters. You, I'm talking to you, I'm not talking to your kids. Very clear. The kids didn't see those things, but the parents did. Yes.
On the thing of the Israelites eating the meat, I can imagine as a parent, three kids, that I tell them they can't have any candy this week. And they just think that's awful. And they complain all week, just a week, not a lifetime, that they just, that they need candy, they need candy. And then I get finally fed up enough and I say, fine, here is a bowl of candy. And I put it in front of them and they eat every bit of the bowl. I would be mad. Because not only did they not listen, it didn't happen. But I would be really furious with them because not only did they complain, they're so greedy and so selfish that they didn't even, they show absolutely nothing holy.
Yeah.
I would be furious. I could see him saying, fine, you know what? The eight ball? You're going to stick and die off of it.
Yeah. Can I give him candy to him?
Brittany, I have, my time has run. I'm way over time right now. But I wanted to just make a conclusion matter here because we're getting... Daniel, I'm taking away Daniel's time here. Verse 25 says he did it for another 40 days and 40 nights. Because after they rebelled, didn't want to go in the promised land, and they went there and they rebelled against him, went anyway, and they got killed out. He says, I came before God again for 40 days and 40 nights. Three times. Three times. Two of them, he didn't have to eat and drink because God took care of him up there. The last time, I think he suffered. But he pleaded. In verse 29. Who is our advocate? The Messiah is our advocate. Moses is like... Moses, like the one who is going to come. As you almost hear the words of the Messiah saying, yes, Father, they are your people. Yes, and yes, you inherit them. But says they're your inheritance, you got them. And notice you're the one that brought them out. And you're the one that reached your hand out and delivered them. And Moses said, God heard me. Now that's a pretty powerful man. Not very many men that I could find. In fact, I don't think there's another person in all the Bible that could address God that way. to save the lives of thousands and thousands of people. And that's why Jesus is like him. His words can save the lives of millions.